We live in a fantasy world now. Reality has been destroyed.
This is the time that we really need to pay attention.
The probabilities are overwhelmingly on gold's side.
That is the best environment to see gold increase its value.
Welcome to Palisades Gold Radio. I'm your host, Tom Bondrovic. Joining me today is Gareth Soloway, President, CFO, and Chief Market Strategist of InTheMoneyStocks.com. Thanks for joining me today, Gareth.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me back. It's a pleasure.
It's excellent to have you as always. So we saw at the tail end of last week a really dismal jobs report. Do you ever take into account news like this, or do you just look at the charts and let your indicators tell the story for you?
Well, in general, you want to focus mostly on the indicators, but you don't want to be totally kind of oblivious to what's going on around. So, for instance, the jobs number coming in at 266,000 versus the expectation of 1 million, what it does is it basically tells the market that the Fed may be on hold for a little while longer. And we saw the market rally on the back of that, at least on Friday. Now, today we're seeing the tech sector get blasted to the downside, but at the same time, you know, the Fed likely will be on hold for just a bit more, at least until we get that next jobs number. So you do want to be aware at least of the economic data that's coming out, even if you follow the charts 99% of the time.
So do you have any sectors that you focus on more than others, Gareth, or do you mostly look for clean chart patterns that you can apply your framework to?
That's a great question. And I always stress this to traders and investors is that, you know, if you know how to read the charts, you can trade anything, assuming it has volume behind it. So I always encourage people to not just focus on one thing specifically, because you're limiting your opportunities. And sometimes if you're a really disciplined trader like I am, you know, you're not going to get a ton of opportunities. So the more things you can look at, the more trading setups you'll have. So I would strongly encourage people to not say, oh, I'll just trade the ES futures or just trade gold or this. You know, look for the same chart patterns all over the map and give yourself more opportunities to make money. So I think that's important.
Do you have any relationships that are, let's say, prominent in your mind? If you see one thing going down, you immediately look to, you know, confirm that move in another asset class?
Yeah, absolutely. So you do have things that are kind of combined. So for instance, in general, what I'll look for, let's just talk about the S&P 500. If the S&P 500 drops, let's say 2% in a day, and I see a breakdown on Apple, I may not be as convinced that Apple is going to see continued weakness versus if the S&P was neutral that day and Apple broke down. So you look at these relationships with things that influence the other trading vehicle, and you make sure that it has an outstanding or outlier factor. So for instance, if the S&P is flat, you would assume Apple would be flat. If Apple's weak on a day when the S&P is flat, that tells you there's relative weakness in that equity. And that can be a telltale sign of institutional selling pressure and potential for more downside.
Interesting. So, Gareth, of course, last week we saw gold finally break through that $1,800 level. Is this a breakout level to you? And what do you want to see to confirm that move?
Yeah. So I've been a huge gold bug for the last year or so, talking about how I think gold continues to go up. You just can't deny it. It's weird because there are so many people out there saying, oh, well, it's different this time. I've heard that for the last 20 years since I've been trading in terms of different stocks and commodities and so forth. And really, it's never different because the market trades off of fear and greed, right? I mean, those are the emotions. People are trading the market, so those are the emotions that are going to rule. So in general, gold continues to be something that I'm very, very bullish on. You have to just look at the printing of money. You have to look at the interest rate factor. I know a lot of people have said, oh, well, when interest rates go up, gold sometimes goes down. I agree with that to a certain point. But when you get into the inflationary side of interest rates moving up, that's where, to me, gold becomes an outstanding buy, even when interest rates are moving up. And I think we're very close to that at this point, if not already entering. One thing I do want to show you guys, we talked about this, I believe, the last time I was on, was this Fibonacci retrace in gold. And I think it continues to be one of the best things that I could even talk about with you guys. So let's talk about the gold chart here. Let me show my screen and we can take a look here. But you can see here that gold has basically replicated the exact same thing that it did in a prior period. So again, if I just zoom out just a tiny bit, we can see dates on here. And basically, you had the high from basically 1979 to 1980 at $876 per ounce. And then you had this pierce of that high in 2007, 2008-ish, and then it retraced back down. So it basically broke out and then failed initially. And the Fibonacci retrace was a 382 level or a 382 retrace. We then continued up. So make sure you note that after the retrace, you had this monster breakout where we went all the way up to $1,910 approximately before the next pullback on gold. And then recently we've done that same thing again. We pierced the 1910 level going above $2,000 an ounce. And then we've retraced back down. And I had a Fibonacci retrace of around $1,749. It went a little bit below that, but you can see that gold price is now starting to move higher and starting to break up. And my guess is we're going to see gold really push to the upside here and make its way sharply higher. I have a couple charts that I'd like to show here as well in terms of targets. So if you look and just take, and there's two metrics to find a target, or there's multiple ways to find a target. But in this situation, I took the low going back to 99 to 2000 at $260 all the way up to the 1920. That's a move of $1,660. A measured move would be to take the same low here at around 1200 and add that $1,660 amount, and you get a target of 2860 on the price of gold. Another way to do it, and this is again just showing you multiple ways to calculate targets, but also factoring in that the targets remain very, very close that you're finding. If you take this high at 875 and you notice that that move to the upside of the 1920 level is 1,045 difference, then you can also take that same 1,045, add it to the 1920, so add that in, and you get 2965. And for me, it's probably a two-year target on this gold chart. And I'm looking for a move basically up to just shy of 3,000 over the next 2 years based on this analysis.
Interesting. So Gareth, when we're talking about that, let's just take, for example, that 1920 level, is that, let's say, the next zone that could act as resistance for the gold price?
That's exactly what it is. So anytime you have a major pivot high like that, where the price backs off significantly, once you get back to that, you're going to have a certain amount of sellers saying, oh, you know, this is where I entered the trade. You know, they were thinking it was breaking out at that point. And they're going to say, okay, I'm back to break even. And this is, again, getting into the psychology of trading, where just psychologically you say, oh, I'm break even. All right, I'm out. You know, that was a scary trade because gold backed off so much. I'm just going to take my flat and move on. And so it'll have some action to work through there, some selling, but I ultimately do think it's going higher. And again, you think about the amount of printing of money, the way that things are structured in the US, where if interest rates go up, the amount of money that has to be printed just to pay the interest on the debt is just going to go nuts to the upside. That means we're going to have to print more money to pay down our debt. To me, it's one of those trades that's kind of easy, you know, to be in gold, just let it sit there. And if we have to do what we have to do in this country, you're going to see that gold offset the loss in purchasing power pretty significantly.
So in that same vein, Gareth, last week we heard Janet Yellen say that interest rates will have to rise. What do you think about this timeline for the Fed actually having a higher interest rate? And is it possible that they're going to be able to actually do it?
So yeah, and that's such a great point, because Janet Yellen finally let the cat out of the bag. I mean, Jerome Powell, Federal Reserve Chair, he's been so hesitant to say that, you know, interest rate hikes are going to come. And now Janet Yellen just kind of threw it out there a little bit. And this is how the Fed has to work. They have to, they'll never come out and just shock the market, because shocks are what crush the market. That'll freak out investors. So they kind of throw little carrots out to us and they say, okay, well, you this week, you're going to say something about interest rate hikes, and then you'll walk it back, which is what she did, right? And then you'll have a Fed governor who's not the Fed chair. They'll say something about interest rates, and then they'll walk it, you know. And so slowly the market starts to get more accustomed to interest rates moving up. Now, going to your question about, you know, can they actually raise interest rates? The answer is they have to somewhat, but they're going to be restricted by how much. So I think interest rates are naturally going to push higher. We've seen this from 1% to 1.75% on the 10-year. The Fed will probably allow them to get to between 2 and 3%, and then the Fed is going to be forced to cap them there, and they'll try to talk it down. Now, the market's going to fight them, because the amount of inflation that I think we're going to see is going to make, you know, other countries say, why am I going to buy your debt if I don't think you're going to be able to repay it? So they're going to have to do their best to kind of get things under control. But it's going to be kind of a crazy next few years, I think.
I couldn't agree more, Gareth. In that, what you're saying about inflation, how do you act accordingly when you're expectant of a lot higher inflation? And how do you, let's say, trade to offset the destruction of purchasing power?
Man, that is wow. So gold is for certain. Gold, silver, palladium, platinum, all those ways are ways to offset it for sure. In terms of, some people would say, oh, real estate right now is so high that I cannot justify, you know, putting money there unless it's a house you're actually going to live in which case maybe it makes sense. So that's off the table. Cryptocurrency, I loved when it was a lot lower. Now you're at these ridiculous levels and you see Dogecoin at 75 cents and that's crazy. You know, Elon Musk obviously was on Saturday Night Live. It fell after that as a sell the news event. But I can't, you know, pick up more cryptocurrency here until it corrects. Now, the nice thing about Bitcoin is that I do think it will correct. I do think it'll correct over 50%. And I do think we'll get buying opportunities. And I would say that once you get to reasonable levels on cryptocurrency, you can absolutely start, you know, protecting yourself by buying some of that. But it's hard to find right now. You know, I think one of the interesting areas is China, China stocks. I think that moving outside of the U.S. to invest in other areas that maybe haven't rallied quite as much, that have better growth ways or growth possibilities, those could be ways as well to kind of protect yourself.
Absolutely. And there's a couple charts that we'll get to on that stuff. But before we move away from the metals, I'd like to get your thoughts on silver. We've had guests on recently that say that the 2750 level on silver is very, very important. What are your thoughts for how you're seeing the silver chart right now, Gareth?
Yeah, so I'll show my SLV chart to you guys here, and we can just go over it real quickly. But basically, you have this beautiful bullish consolidation pattern that's going on. And you could see that you basically had this big breakout here, and then we started to go into this chop sideways, which is basically the market on silver digesting a big move that started way back here below $12 on the SLV. And if you zoom out even more, you can see again here, it even was a little bit lower there from that move up. So you had this move from, let's say, 11 and change all the way to 26 on the SLV. And anytime you get a big move in anything, especially a metal, you need a digestion period. We're seeing it in gold with the consolidation and the pullback off the recent highs as well. But this is a nice chart with trend lines, and you can follow it very carefully. So I think the level you're referring to is basically this pivot high here. You can see when the Reddit crew, Wall Street Bets, was pumping it, you had this gap up and it failed. That was a dead sell indicator for it to come back down. But look at how beautifully it just came right back down to this support area right here before moving back up. So if you're watching silver for a breakout, look for any daily or weekly close above this pivot high, which on the SLV is around $27.40, we'll call it. And that, to me, would be a very strong buy signal on silver for another leg up. And you could kind of do a measured move on this where you take this low, which is, again, around $11, and you take this high, which, again, was around $27. And so there's a difference there of $16. So upon a breakout, you could probably add $16 to the SLV, and that would give you an accurate upside target for when the breakout occurs. Last thing I'll say, and we always want to protect our downside, the only thing I would not want to see on silver is a daily or weekly close below this trend line. So again, this trend line here connecting the recent lows over the last 6 to 8 months here, if price got below that, that would be the one signal to say, okay, step back on this. This is potentially a broken chart.
So going back to what you were saying about that, adding that $16 difference and seeing that breakout from here, is that the point that you start looking at that level and thinking about being cautious and selling that back?
Well, so you're saying if it broke above that, or you're saying if it gets to that target?
Mm-hmm. If it gets to that target, are you looking at taking some profits to make sure that you lock in your gain on that trade?
Yes, absolutely. And in all fairness, I'm a shorter term trader. So probably along the way, I would pare my position back as well a little bit, because again, you never know for sure the future, right? I mean, we never know for sure. So as you get deeper and deeper into the money, smart money is going to take a little bit off the table. But you want to leave a majority on. Once you get to that measured move, I would probably, especially if it's in a straight shot move, take it all, if not mostly, off the table at that point. And just, and basically what you would do is then analyze the chart over the next couple of weeks to months. And if you start forming a bull flag again, you could then start to look to get back in. If it pulls back, let's say 20%, then you could start adding back as well. And this way you've saved yourself that spread of 20%.
Perfect. So Gareth, in your opinion, is dollar action or real rates more of a driver for metal prices?
That's a good one. I think the dollar action is the immediate trigger. So when you see the dollar up or down for a day, especially when it comes to gold, you see those immediate moves. But I do think the interest rate side, if it's attached to major inflation expectations, that's the macro factor that's going to drive it up, right? But there's no doubt about it that inflation will breed more weakness in the dollar, in my opinion, especially as interest rates move up and the debt has to be serviced by printing more money. It's kind of all connected. But again, I think the dollar is the day-to-day intraday mover, or the micro mover, versus the macro, which is interest rates.
Excellent. So Gareth, can we go through your chart and your expectations for the dollar then?
Yeah, absolutely. Let me just find it over here and bring it up and show my screen again. But absolutely. And we have some interesting stuff here on that. Bear with me here. All right. So here's the chart of the dollar. And what you can basically see is that the dollar is just holding support here. And what I did was I took this pivot high going back to 2013, 2014, and it perfectly matches through the pivot from 2018 and then the current pivots over the last year or so here, these lows. So you can see that the dollar is holding this trend line currently. Now, right now you would say, okay, it's holding support. One of the things that concerns me is that when the dollar hammers on a level multiple times, and in this case, it did over here, and now it's hammering on it here, and then again, just recently in the last, you know, basically currently, is that the level weakens. Think about the best analogy I have for a trend line is when you think about yourself and you want to get through a door, all right? So you hammer that door with your fist, it doesn't budge. You run against it with all your force, it starts to get looser, it maybe starts to crack a little bit. After two or three times running full force at a door, it's very possible that you'll break through that door. So that analogy applies to trend lines. And the more you hit a trend line, the weaker it becomes. So my concern here on the dollar is that the more you're hitting, the more likely you're going to break down. And that's what I'm thinking is going to happen. So technically, based on exactly where we're trading today, this chart is at support, but it's a very weak or minor support. And I would expect a breakdown probably within the next couple of weeks of the dollar, sending it probably to about the 80, maybe all the way down to the 85, 84 level on the DX.
Interesting. So Gareth, when we see lots of volatility as we do in Bitcoin, for example, does this make you more or less likely to try and trade something with major momentum like this?
Yeah. So the more volatility it has, I like to play extremes. So as a trader, I'm not a follower, right? What I think makes me such a good investor and trader is that I find the technical levels and I go inverse to the current move. Now, a lot of people say, oh, that's catching a falling knife, or you're shorting a shooting star. When you have the technicals behind you, you basically put 80% odds in your favor, which to be honest is awesome. I mean, if you could be that, it's basically you're the house of the casino versus the gambler in that situation. So for Bitcoin, I'd be much more inclined to be short up here. Same thing with Dogecoin, with the cryptocurrencies. I could never be someone that says, oh, I bought in after it ran 40,000 on Bitcoin. You know, I mean, I would honestly be embarrassed to say that. Now, listen, it's not to say that people can't make money, because there's plenty of stocks, there's plenty of cryptocurrencies that you could have bought in. In fact, Bitcoin was one of them, and you could have made a ton of money still to the upside. But for me, it's a risk assessment. So it's like, okay, well, if I'm chasing, it's like another analogy, and I'm off on the analogies today, but if I go to the mall and I see these pair of jeans that were $100 yesterday and they're on sale 50% off today and they're really good quality and I've always wanted them, I'm more willing to buy them. If I go to that same mall and those jeans just got marked up to $200, I mean, do I really want to buy it? You know, it was just $100 yesterday. Why do I want to buy it today for $200? I'd much rather wait for the sale. And I think that's one of the things that makes a investor a good long-term investor and trader versus being a very short-term kind of momentum player.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about the difference in psychology in investing versus, you know, buying jeans, right?
yeah, it is. And that's what's so crazy is I tell investors to treat it like you're going to the mall and you're going shopping, or these days you're on Amazon or wherever you are. You know, you want to buy stocks when they're on sale, not when everyone else is rushing out, causing a price spike in that, right? And usually we do that. It's human psychology to want to buy things on sale. But for some reason, when it comes to stocks or cryptocurrencies or commodities, it's different. We don't have that same psychology, but you should have that same psychology.
Yeah, that's a great point. So as we're talking about Bitcoin, you have drawn an interesting comparison to Bitcoin and the Shanghai Composite Index. So tell us about that relationship and you know what you see from it.
Yeah, so this is a very cool kind of, you know, thing that I was just messing around one day and I was like, oh, you know, I kind of like Chinese stocks right now. And I'm just curious about the charts. And I started to look at the Shanghai chart and then I said, you know what, this chart looks really familiar. And before I knew it, I was like, you know what, this is the identical chart to Bitcoin prior to the breakout. So here you have a chart of Bitcoin, right? And this is prior to the mega move. You can see you have a very defined pivot from 2017, where we made that high near 20,000. It then had the huge correction down, big bounce, corrective move again. And then we came right up to this same trend line. You can see 1, 2, 3. And then basically what ended up happening with Bitcoin is you had this monster breakout. And the breakout took, you know, Bitcoin from basically $10,000 to $65,000 before we've had the correction down that we've seen recently. And what's so cool here is if you look at the Shanghai composite chart, it's identical. And I was saying to myself, well, does a chart really, you know, just because charts match, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get the same move. I mean, it means you might get some sort of move, but what about the same sort of move? And then I started to think about the comparisons between the Shanghai market, the Chinese market, and Bitcoin. And there's a lot of similarities. So here you can see the Shanghai chart. Look at the chart, how it's literally identical. You had this major pivot high here, the big corrective move, the secondary high, corrective move, and now you're just underneath that wedge pattern, high pivot. All right, so some of the similarities that are aside from a chart is that, you know, the Chinese market has been restricted in terms of global investment to some extent, or quite a bit of an extent. And it's a much newer market. And if you look at Bitcoin prior to this recent move, you didn't have institutions in, they were staying away, people were unsure. I mean, heck, I tried to convince my parents and my sister, you know, literally a year ago to buy Bitcoin and Litecoin and some of these. And I even told my sister that I'd open accounts for, you know, her daughters and I'd buy Litecoin. And Litecoin was at $40 at this point. I think it hit 300 recently. And they're like, oh no, you know, don't do that. Just pay them in cash. And looking back, it's like, oh my goodness, I should have just gone ahead and done it. But that was the skepticism there. And you have the same sort of skepticism with Chinese stocks. There's always questions about their accounting. And we know the SEC recently said, hey, listen, if you guys don't start reporting your accounting in a more normalized fashion, according to the United States, we may delist you in 3 years. So the same sort of things are going on with the two markets. And that makes me think that if you can get a breakout on the Shanghai composite over the next, let's say, 3 months or 6 months, you could see a massive move similar to Bitcoin, which would put the Shanghai close to 20,000 over the next 2 to 3 years. So one thing I want to be clear on, it hasn't broken out yet. So be aware of that. A lot of people take when I say, oh, this, you know, you're going to see this major move, they're like, okay, well, why hasn't it moved? It's been a week. And the answer is, well, it hasn't broken out yet. Just like Bitcoin was in that wedge pattern for a long period of time, not until it broke out did it have the mega size move to the upside. So again, watch this chart. Ways to invest would be ETFs like FXI. I would also diversify with names like Alibaba and Baidu and some of the beaten down Chinese stocks that are out there. But again, if you want to be really careful, you could wait until the breakout occurs and then jump on board. But yeah, very, very fascinating stuff. I mean, this is why I love charts, Tom. I mean, you can find these gems in the charts and You know, it's one thing to be out and find something cool in the sand, but then these are things that can make you millions of dollars. And that's what makes it even more exciting.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more, Gareth. You've also been posting recently about a major pivot in the S&P. Can you walk us through why you see a real change here coming?
Yeah. So with the spiders or the S&P, and you have to kind of just kind of be aware of what's going on here. And I'll show the chart just of these spiders here real quick. And I have this little bit of a tight wedge pattern. And you can see that the upside of the market keeps stalling right around this upper trend line here. And that upper trend line to me is important because it's showing us that the markets are having a lot of trouble getting above that. And then on the other side of the coin, if you take the low from March 2020 and connect it through the lows, you have this closing wedge pattern, which basically is telling you that the market is going to make a big move outside of this range. Okay, so basically as a wedge comes together, it forces price at some point to break either to the downside or to the upside. Now, the reason why I think it's going to be the downside is because not only is the market extended to ridiculous levels, but you have to think about what's coming. And you have to look and say, okay, well, we know tax hikes are coming. Corporate taxes are going to go up. You know, the top 1% or the top 0.3% are going to be paying income taxes on essentially long-term capital gains. These are all things that are going to make institutions want to unload. And one of the key tidbits here is if you look at the money flow from institutions, the institutional money has exited the market over the last month at a almost historic rate, while the small investor is making up the difference, which is basically keeping this market from going down. It's going sideways to up, right? Not the NASDAQ. Obviously, the NASDAQ hasn't made a new high yet. But that is very concerning when you see the institutional money unloading at such a historic rate. And the only reason the market, again, isn't tanking is because money flows into ETFs and funds from retail is so high. And I liken that to 1999. I liken it to 2007. A lot of similarities there where the big money sees the writing on the wall a long time before the small money does.
Interesting. So, Gareth, what other areas do you look at that you think would be maybe overlooked by most mainstream investors? As you brought up, you know, looking at the Shanghai composite, you know, that's something that's probably not on a lot of people's radar.
Yeah. So the Shanghai is definitely one to watch. I've been accumulating some of the smaller Chinese stocks like TME. It's still a multi-billion-dollar company. IQ, same thing. Vipshop is an interesting one. So those names for sure that have been beaten down, those are all names that got caught up in the Archegos Capital collapse where we saw Viacom get crushed to the downside as well. I actually think Viacom down here is a really interesting long trade, pays a 2.5% dividend. It's trading at a forward PE of 9. They blew away earnings last week. The stock is very low considering where it was over $100 not long ago. And it's basically over no fault of its own. So I like stocks where they get hammered because of something that doesn't directly impact the company itself. I think gold continues to be someplace where you really want to be invested, or the other metals, because of the inflationary things and the printing of money that the Federal Reserve and the government has done. Aside from that, it's hard to find right now. Lumber's up 350%, you know, steel's up, you know, what, 200-300%. It's really crazy at this point with the asset inflation that we've seen. I mean, NFTs are going for millions of dollars at this point. So I would say, you know, those are your areas. Keep some on the sidelines, even though I don't like being in cash. I think you want to be in a portion of cash because if another opportunity arises, you have to be ready to jump on that opportunity.
Absolutely. Gareth, do you have anything else you'd like to add as we wrap up here?
Not really. I think it's great to talk to you. And, you know, if people want to just follow my daily commentary, feel free to follow me on Twitter. At Gareth Soloway, super easy to find me on there. And I try to do a few posts every day with insight into the markets and chart setups. And I think that's about it. I think it's been a fun time. Thank you.
Absolutely, Gareth. It's always great to speak with you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Tom. Have a great one.
You too.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice. Guests on this show are not compensated for their appearance. Listeners are urged to educate themselves and make their own decisions. Do not base any investment decisions on the information contained. To view our full disclaimer, please visit our website.